Welcome to today's episode of the Career Confidence Podcast, where I sit down with Alessandra Edwards, speaker, mentor, and trainer of the DNA of Performance. This conversation has so many layers to it. Alessandra explains why and how we can all take charge of our own health and genetic destiny, why we do not need to be victims of our genes and our DNA, how we can really shape and build our future with the right tools and strategies and health protocols to become the healthiest, most energized versions of ourselves. I really do feel like this is a missing piece when it comes to leadership and careers. We can't show up as our best selves. We can't lead. We can't inspire if we are not in a physically and mentally strong place ourselves. So listen to today's episode with such an open mind and just, I guess, embrace what Alessandra has to say, because if you even implement one of these strategies today, I guarantee you're going to see huge impact in your life, in your energy, and in your work. So enjoy this episode today and let me know what your biggest takeaway was. Now over to Alessandra. Alessandra, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast today. I am really excited to have this conversation today. Can you give the audience a little bit of an introduction into who you are, your background, and we can dive into this very interesting conversation from there. So Alessandra, over to you.
Lovely. Thank you so much for inviting me to be here. And hello to your audience as well. So I'm Alessandra. Essentially, I'm a health scientist and a clinical nutritionist. But what I'm really focused on and interested on is helping senior executives understand their genetic strengths and vulnerabilities in order to then utilize this knowledge to achieve really boundless performance, both in a personal and a professional sense. And I'm happy, obviously, to break that down a little bit further. But I did not start in health science space at all. I mean, I couldn't have started further from a health and well-being space. In fact, I grew up in a particularly unhealthy environment. My mum, gorgeous woman, but smoked like a chimney. In fact, she was advised to smoke while pregnant with me in order to have a small baby. You know, that was Italy in the 70s for you. I'm sure that, you know, Gen Xers who might be listening might be relating to some of those, you know, lifestyle habits that the doctor used to partake in and dish out advice on. So I grew up in a very, if you like, scientifically dogmatic environment, in the sense that everything had to be what the doctor said, everything had to be medicine-based. There was no knowledge or interest whatsoever in terms of lifestyle practices, exercise, nutrition, or anything like that. So I grew up very much with a very strict model of the world, and a strict model of what health and personal well-being and how this affected leadership really meant.
Okay, we're going to go into a lot today, but it's interesting how you've sort of, I guess, gone into wellness, but it wasn't how you were sort of programmed as a young child. So can we talk to that a little bit? Because I feel like you either go sort of one way or the other. When you grow up in a very unhealthy household, you can then go opposite way, which obviously you've done. You've really been studying this and fascinated by this. Or you can go the opposite way where, you know, you grow up in health. Like, I guess I was quite lucky looking back at my childhood that my parents were very healthy and fit and we ate good food. So it was almost like installed in me from a young age, but hasn't been for you. So where did that sort of real interest really come in then? Where did that sort of switch turn on?
I think it was probably on a continuum. I don't think that it was any one time where overnight the penny dropped and it's like, oh my goodness, there is something else out there that I need to investigate. And the continuum really started with the observation that, firstly, I was born with a congenital heart defect. So from an early age, I was put through the ringer in terms of doing lots of medical tests to understand what was happening. I couldn't do any sports. happy to report that I completely smashed those myths and the prognosis that I was given, because I'm actually running a half marathon in a few months. But so I had that, and then witnessed the vast majority of my family die at a very young age. So I lost all my grandparents, bar one, by age six or seven. My paternal aunt died of breast cancer, age 40 or 42. My dad died of brain cancer when he was 50 and I was 12. My mother was then diagnosed with aggressive breast cancer within a year of that happening. And so there were literally and the same also, my maternal uncles as well also died very young of heart disease. So I was surrounded by this. And if you like, when you grow up with that, and that's all you hear and that's all you know, it starts to rebuild a model of the world that's very fear-based and very scarcity-based. And so I found myself in my early 20s experiencing a significant mental health crisis and really looking for answers and going through, the traditional routes, which were marginally helpful, but really did not explain many of the symptoms that I was experiencing. And so even though at the time, you know, I completed a degree, I was doing a master's and then went on in England, by the way, we can talk about that afterwards, then started a career, I really felt that there was something underpinning all of this. And this history of poor family health just really followed me everywhere, just feeling that I was living with a dated sentence. And I was absolutely convinced that I too would die young, whether of cancer or of early onset heart disease. And so bit by bit, I started to research things on my own and then decided to go part-time, go back to uni, do another degree. And that's where it really took off. And so really started health science with a particular bent towards nutrition and lifestyle living. But then I became really interested in genetics, because that story that lay behind there was very personal to me, to really want to understand, well, are we really limited by our family DNA? Is that all there is to it? Is it just genetics? Am I going to find out terrible things about my genes? And does that mean that I am going to die? And what I found is that actually, no, it's not true at all. And what I found was instead great knowledge, great empowerment, and great confidence to make small and significant changes to my life, to my nutrition, to how I approached medicine, in order to then really looking forward to living into my 90s. So I really have this thing of Dr. Quilaretti, I don't know if you're familiar with him in the US, he talks about the centenarian decathlon. So that's his marker of longevity and health span, is being able to do 10 specific activities into our 90s. And so that's my idea. I see myself as a 90-year-old business owner, still helping and mentoring leaders, as well as leading a fabulous life, traveling, enjoying my kids, doing sports, you know, hanging out with my dog, and learning, continuous learning. So for me, that really turned into a complete message of hope. And I'm now really extremely passionate to educate kick-ass leaders in understanding how you turn this information into your own personalized life plan.
Oh, I love that so much. I knew this was going to be such a good conversation. I just want to say something that really stood out for me there, is that you could well done for being so self-aware, knowing like what your thought pattern and where your mental health was going, because I can imagine that so many people have a story that, you know, if they've lost grandparents or if they've lost their parents young, that's their genetic destiny. That's where I'm headed because my mum got breast cancer or my dad got a brain tumor, therefore. And the biggest power that I think we can all take back as human beings is that epigenetics. We are not governed by our genes. It's the lifestyle choice. It's the nutrition, which I want to go into now. It's the stress management. It's all of these things that actually are more important than our genes, because we turn on and off those genes, from what I can understand, from the environment, the thoughts we think, the amount of stress. And I know you're the expert in this, but I've been fascinated by this as well, with Bruce Lipton's work. Obviously, he was the founder of epigenetics. Like, it's fascinated me from day one, because I'm all about power into us as individuals. I feel like as human beings, we have so much untapped power and potential. We have the power to heal ourselves. We are incredible beings. And I think so many people just get a diagnosis and they think that's it. And it's not the case at all. So I just want to just say, like, amazing that you identified that's not going to be my destiny and I get to regain my power. How fantastic.
I'd love to take credit to say, yes, it was amazing. And gosh, I was so smart. To be honest, that really took a while. So it was a journey of developing this self-awareness, and along the way also working with amazing mentors and also doing psychological introspective work with specific specialists. You know, particularly schema work was really amazing to understand how to rewire those early childhood stories that we really take on board in our subconscious. So if there is anyone listening here going, wow, okay, how did she do that? It wasn't an overnight thing. It was suffered. Mm-hmm. You know, it took a while.
Mm-hmm. And did part of the healing come because you started to educate yourself? I'd love to go into more like, you know, of this journey and what you learned about the body, genetics, DNA, and how that's helped you overcome those fearful thoughts. So what did that sort of journey look like for you?
I love my question. You worded it so beautifully. Where did that start? So I think, interestingly enough, obviously having done my own DNA testing, I know that I tend towards very low dopamine levels. And so in my frame of work, when I speak to clients, I speak of DNA signatures. And so my signature is warrior, meaning that I actually really thrive under stress and I do really well with change and diversion. And so firstly, understanding that and looking back at the whole journey was really interesting to note that I was on a really good career path. Like, I could have, you know, carried on from management into senior roles and it was all mapped out. I could have done really well. So what was it specifically that a little bit like shining, you know, the shiny object, right? I always talk about my dog going squirrels like this. So something clearly diverted me, and it is something that I get very excited about, learning new things. So I think that there was part of that that prompted me to go, wow, are you going to go back to university? That's really exciting. Secondly, there was this tendency, I think, always to be a little bit of a type A personality of, you will not tell me what to do, and I'm very competitive. So I will get there and I will achieve this. So whilst on one side, there was this fear of the genetic predetermined path and that fear really sitting in the background, the other side was like me almost like having a temper tantrum and going, no, I do not accept that. That's the final answer. I will work this out. I mean, which sounds incredibly egotistical, but I'm really thankful that that competitive nature pushed me to look under so many rocks. And this process of research wasn't just going back to university, because when I went back to university, this information wasn't available. So this was then, it just started a process of understanding research, you know, scientific rigor, but then also having the ability to question the limitations also of scientific study. So for example, you mentioned Bruce Lipton, and for, you know, the listeners or the, you know, the audience who are not aware of this, is absolutely, he's considered the father of epigenetics, but also he got kicked out and got shunned and banned by the scientific community because of pushing the envelope a little bit too far for things that would be considered outside of that scientific rigor. And whilst I'm doing a master's in neuroscience at the moment, and I have to really produce papers that are based on very rigorous and objective data, the other side of me is also really interested in what you were talking about earlier. There is so much we don't know. And just because we don't know it doesn't mean it's not real and not worth investigating. You know, decades ago, we believed that the placebo effect was absolute nonsense, right? Something to be discounted. We now know that it is a thing. So why can't we also have an awful lot of other things that are more energetically based and we don't actually have even the language or the tools to measure? I think that we've all experienced in positions of leadership when we're there to face difficult decisions, intuition, right? We know that there is such a thing as intuition. How do we quantify that? How do we measure it? I can't measure it through a blood test, but is it real? Of course it's real. We've all experienced it. And in fact, the calmer, more grounded, more resilient we are, the more we can listen to that intuitive voice. And it seems to be very much linked to the parasympathetic part of the nervous system, which is activated when we are calm, when we feel safe. And so to me, looking at the world at large, without, we're not going to get into details of politics or anything, but just looking at broad patterns and trends that we're now seeing in leadership globally, it is not a surprise to see that we are moving into that style of leadership that has that quick decision-making that just really goes for it and is not very much in tune with that intuitive side of things, because everyone is so chronically stressed. Yeah. And when we're chronically stressed, we cannot emotionally regulate. And when you can't emotionally regulate, your sympathetic nervous system is in overdrive. Your amygdala in your brain is firing and it makes you feel distrustful, risk averse, and under threat. So we cannot really listen to that inner voice.
And it's the inner voice where so much of our wisdom is stored. And look, I think you and I are on the same page. It's like there's things that have been proven by science, but there's also so much that, you know, I think the thing with science is that if they can't explain, understand it, they almost dismiss it. And I think like there's this other realm of spirituality that is very closely linked to science. And I don't know if you also follow Dr. Joe Dispenza's work as well, and all of the data he's got now of people literally healing themselves from stage four cancers and getting out of wheelchairs and walking. Like, it is actually unbelievable what he is now producing with his data. And I feel like the more people can prove that we can heal ourselves and we can really sort of, you know, yeah, we don't need to be held back by our genetics and our, you know, our bloods and all that sort of stuff that's going on within us, the more the science community will have to sit up and pay attention. And hopefully we can sort of bridge the gap between spirituality and science and come together. But just on the DNA testing now, how do you test somebody? Like, how did you go about doing, understanding your DNA and your genetics? Is there a particular test that you had to do? Is it blood work? What does that look like?
Yes. So firstly, my message throughout this, and I love that we're having this really big conversation, my message, the underlying message that I give is, regardless of who the authority that you are consuming the information from, whether it be the latest scientific paper or, you know, medical community or some of the broader sort of more health-based influencers, I always say, embark upon a journey of inquiry and utilize basically the tools of, you know, being agnostic. So, because it's so easy in this day and age where everything is algorithm-based to just live in an echo chamber. And so if you looked at my algorithm, it would be very different to yours, because I will like and consume content that makes me feel good, that really massages my beliefs and egos that my value system is the correct one. So I'd always say, just take everything with a pinch of salt, even what I'm saying today, and really become the master of your own experiments. And so in my model of the world, these experiments are very much grounded in testing. So number one, DNA testing, and I do not perform full genome testing. So we don't look at the full 25,000 genetics. We do genomic wellness testing, which looks at about 100 genetic mutations, and we don't look at any of the so-called penetrating genes. So genes like the BRCA gene mutation that manifests in breast cancer, ovarian cancer, or some of the other penetrating genes where we really know if you have these genetics, your chances of manifesting that disease are 100% or close to 100%. So I'm more interested in understanding the particular changes that we all have within our DNA, which then manifest in different productions of different things in the body. So a slow production of certain neurotransmitters or a slow breakdown of certain neurotransmitters, an increased need for specific vitamins, which then is going to affect the whole process of energy production, just to give you some ideas. Now, as you were saying earlier, just having those genes doesn't mean that those things are real and unchanging. So that is a genetic blueprint. It's a little bit like, to utilize the metaphor of a house, it's the blueprint that you would ask your architect to create, right? So you've got the drawing, you've got the plans, but then when you actually go and make the house, you will have lots more choices, as many home builders will know, right? And this is why the budget changes from what the architect estimated, because it depends on the quality of the materials you're going to use. It's going to depend on the elements, right? If you didn't have the roof on and you put the floor in and then we have floods, that's going to have an effect regardless of what that initial plan was. Or perhaps, you know, the tradesmen that you're utilizing are going on strike, or they, you know, you skimped a little bit on the labor and so they don't do a great job. So that is exactly what I think of in terms of epigenetics. We all have this blueprint, and my blueprint, looking at my own testing, you know, isn't great. There's a lot of high risk of oxidative stress, meaning that my cells, particularly as I age, can be more prone to DNA mutations and damage and not repair themselves very well. But looking at that test, I can't say, yes, for sure you're going to get cancer. There isn't a test that tells you that. So it's important then to look at the quality of the build, which in my world is the snapshot, your biochemical snapshot, your blood tests. And so that you can match up the two to really arrive at the full picture of, well, it looks like your potential for resilience, for productivity, for focus, for memory is this. Right now, however, as a result of the blood testing, the cognitive testing, neurotransmitter testing, or gut microbiome that we're looking, you find yourself here. Yeah. So you were born with the white picket fence, you know, multimillion dollar house, and you're kind of living in a student share. That's it. Yeah. So how do we then make changes that are specific to what we see right now that will encompass nutritional changes, supplementary changes, behavioral changes, creating a performance lifestyle around your work home that more closely matches what your genetic potential is? And inevitably, when you do that, amazing things start to happen, because not only within a short period of time, people start feeling amazing, yeah? They've got more energy, they lose weight, they sleep better, their memory comes back, they're more resilient. But what happens is that because you're actually, going back to the metaphor of the build, you're starting to put in the correct materials and correct building practices according to the original blueprint, then that house, it's going to withstand the elements, the stresses a lot better, yeah? And so that will have an effect in years to come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes so much sense. I love the idea of being very preventative, because what people tend to do is wait for crisis, wait to get the diagnosis. So I'm curious now, so let's just say, if someone listens to this right now, What would be some like warning signs that they should start paying attention to what's going on within them, maybe come and see you? And I want to sort of dive a bit more into like sort of what you do, sort of to to get the when you do this testing. What are some warning signs that people, leaders, you know, really sort of busy career professionals be looking out for that should be like a red flag of like, if this is constantly occurring, you probably should seek a little bit of advice and potentially come and see yourself or somebody else and sort of look into what's going on internally. Any sort of red flags we should be aware of?
Yes, there are several. I work mostly with 45 to 65 age group because I tend to work with senior executives. So that's how long it takes to get to that level. So I would say for that middle age group, the biggest sign and the first one to really pay attention to is fatigue that does not resolve with sleep. And so particularly if you feel, because obviously, you know, everyone's working long hours. And so that's one thing. But if you then do a stint of several days and you're going to bed at a reasonable time, you're getting your 7-8 hours, you are still waking up tired, even though you feel you've had a reasonable night's sleep with not too many awakenings. I would say that's a concerning sign. So I would definitely would want to investigate that. And there will be lots of different reasons. One of the most common ones I see is hypoglycemia during the night. So I fit all my clients with continuous glucose monitor over several weeks. And many, many people actually have severe changes in blood glucose levels in the night, even though they've done generic blood testing with the GP, their fasting glucose is normal. Sometimes the GP, if they're suspecting there might be some blood glucose changes, they do a test called HbA1c, which measures an average of your blood glucose over the previous 3 months. And that's normal. So you get given a clean bill of health. But then when we do this kind of testing, we actually see that they're going into this hypoglycemia, this low sugar at night. And so what that does is that the person might not even be aware of this happening. It might not even wake them up, but it wakes them up enough so that they're not having the proper architecture of sleep cycles that everyone needs to go through the night. And they're having a lot of cortisol surges throughout the night, because that's how the body then increases blood glucose, right? We pump out cortisol so that we can release a little bit of blood glucose. And so they're perpetuating, if you like, this chronic stress. Now, I get them to do many challenges. So there is a specific list of foods that we challenge to see whether their issue is related to carbohydrate loading. Yes. And so maybe they're in that phase of kind of insulin resistance. Their cells are not consuming the glucose efficiently. Or if they pass the challenges optimally during the day, so we know that there isn't an issue there with carbohydrate loading per se, then we start to see that it's a pattern of stress. Now, I have many clients that started the journey with me, and we start off thinking it might be related to blood glucose. And then we see there's a clear pattern of stress. So they become hypoglycemic Monday to Friday, and then at the weekend, optimal.
Wow.
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating. So I would say that's the first, you know, that's the first thing. The second thing also that I would really want to investigate is, again, speaking of energy, if you're experiencing significant dips in the afternoon, so 1 to 2 hours after eating lunch, and you're feeling particularly worse after eating meals, and especially if eating carbohydrate-rich meals, so a sandwich, you know, some pasta, sushi, you know, rice, that kind of thing. So, because that's very, very common, and the vast majority of people become a bit insulin resistant as they age. This is more significant for women in the perimenopausal years, so 40 through to 50 on average, although this can start happening earlier, and we now know that there are some women out there going into perimenopause in their mid-20s. And as estrogen declines and splutters, it has a significant effect on the body's ability to utilize insulin efficiently. And so what we see is that even though they're exercising and eating relatively well, they're starting to put weight on in the middle. So this is not about personal judgment, fat shaming, you know, all bodies are beautiful. However, not all bodies are efficient metabolically. And so if that has not been a normal for you, carrying extra weight around the belly, and all of a sudden that's happening and you're having these dips, significant dips in energy, you feel like you're losing your short-term memory, feeling a bit of brain fog, that is definitely something that needs to be investigated. And I would definitely recommend doing a fasting blood glucose and checking insulin as well, which is never, ever checked in Australia.
Interesting. So, fatigue is definitely a big one that comes up a lot for professionals. I've got a recruitment company and, you know, we're dealing with a lot of leaders and people that, you know, are under a lot of stress. And it was interesting how that was fascinating to me when you said Monday to Friday, they're getting these spikes in insulin and glucose, but then on the weekends it goes away. And that just proves right there the role of stress. And I guess, what is stress? It's when we don't feel in control. It's when we're focusing on worst case scenarios. A lot of stress is to do with what's going on in our mind. I know it has been for me anyway. I look back at my late 20s. I've shared this before, but I went through a really bad period of severe anxiety. I was having panic attacks. And I was just, again, when I look back on that, I was focusing on all the things I couldn't control. And I was worrying about the worst case scenarios. And I've really had to rewire and retrain my mind to not do that. But it's been a journey. Like you said at the beginning, your journey didn't happen overnight. Wish it did. But it was a real journey of self-discovery and unpacking all of that. And interestingly, I did actually have my DNA test done. I did the 23andMe test and I gave it to my coach at the time when I was sort of really into like doing sort of like fitness competitions and stuff. And he was sort of really big on this. And what came out of that was really interesting as well. But when you're saying about you being a bit of like a high achiever, competitive, like I've definitely fallen into that camp as well. And I've got to be, because I think, for all the good, there's also a dark side to it as well. And even though I was very successful in my career and I was a high performer, I had this other level to me as well that would not know when to stop, not know when to pull back, not listen to my body's alarm systems. And that's why I always say, and I love to sort of, when I speak to wellness and experts, what are some signs that we should be aware of? Because if I had been aware of what to look out for and what to pay attention to, I wouldn't have got myself into probably that position where I was having frequent panic attacks all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes perfect sense. And I'd be very curious to see, you know, what specifically, what genetic mutations they were looking at. So just to give you an example, in relation to what you said, so I said that my genotype is what I call it, warrior, right? So I actually need stress to perform. Otherwise, I'd be, you know, literally like, I'd be like a koala bear on a beach, you know, just sitting in my tree and just looking at the, you know, looking at the sky. So I'm someone that to perform really needs that pressure, accountability, and so for my genotype, the flag is that, am I going towards, sliding towards depressive disorders? Yeah. So that downregulation of engagement, motivation, glass half emptied kind of thing. Am I going that way? Someone who might have what I call more a CEO genotype, and you may well have that, they actually have the opposite to me. So at baseline, they have high levels of dopamine, adrenaline, noradrenaline. So they're cell starters. These are the people that even in COVID, right, under severe lockdowns, they were machines. They were like, you know, it didn't matter who was following the mark. They need zero accountability. In fact, they don't like people following up. It's like, what are you talking about? Just give me a 6-month project. I will deliver it in full, even if it kills me. Yes. And they did really well in lockdown because they don't like the noise. So they like calm. They like strategic thinking. They've got amazing capacity to visualize strategically into the future because their prefrontal cortex is so active. They've got an abundance of dopamine that allows you that visualization. Their downside, however, is they can go into the overthinking. So they are the expert ruminators. They switch the brain on in the morning and it doesn't turn off unless they learn to, number one, doing a little bit of introspection, developing that self-awareness, catching themselves, because that rumination begets more rumination because it's exciting, right? Do more, 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 more. And secondly, they specifically need to then learn techniques such as whether it's, I find meditation might not work very well for these types because it's just too frustrating just sitting down. But doing things like counting breathing, for example, might work better. or doing specific kinds of meditation where they're just listening to something so the brain becomes distracted and engaged in a calmer way. So everyone is a little bit different. And what fascinates me is understanding, rather than say to everyone, okay, we should all go to bed at 9 p.m., do this amount of this kind of exercise, and we should all take, you know, heaps of magnesium, and we should all do meditation at bedtime, whatever, you know, all these things. It's like, well, I'm not a CEO, but even as a business owner with kids and all the things I do, I would struggle to do all of that. Just give me two things that sound reasonable that then I can do, that I know I'll be able to do and implement regularly. Because otherwise, what are we doing? I mean, I remember years ago, I went to a naturopath and I think this person was like giving me like just how to make my own bread in the morning. And so I was just like, who's got time to do that? Like maybe when I retire, but then even then, I think I'll find that really boring. But just who's got time to do all of these things? And I think that then that's why we have this divide of the crazy self-care where you literally have to do everything. And so we feel guilty, especially women we feel guilty because so we do everything for everyone. Now we have to do even more for us. So if we can't do it, we feel guilty. And then on the other hand, then there's people that go, forget it. It's just too much. I get overwhelmed with all this information about self-care. And last time I tried, it made me more stressful having to keep up all this stuff. So we need to find strategies for these very busy women. I know you work with a lot of women in tech. I work with a lot of women in finance and banking. These are big jobs. They're industries that demand a lot. They're high-pressure environments. And we need to be sensible and strategic.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. And I think that all this extra wellness stuff actually adds on the stress on top, because it's like if all of a sudden then you have another to-do list. Oh, now I've done all this and now I've got to do my meditation. Now I've got to do my exercise. Now I've got to cook my bread. Now I've got to just, you know, make sure I've activated my almonds or whatever it is, you know, like it's just crazy. And I actually think if I reflect back on my own anxiety, it was the obsessing about all the health stuff that actually made my anxiety worse. And it actually went the opposite way. Whereas now, like, I mean, you can go down rabbit holes. Like I've got an amazing friend. I love her to pieces, but she's gone down so many rabbit holes. Don't eat this. Don't eat this. Don't drink this. Don't do this. Don't have plastic. I'm like, can you just chill? Because you're actually giving me anxiety and you're supposed to be healthy, but actually you're driving yourself into stress and high beta by focusing on all of these things. It's like sometimes it's all right to eat a bit of non-organic salad. And do you know what? Like I don't have time to make my own bread. So do you know what? I'm going out to Woolies and I'm picking up a loaf. Yes. It's not going to kill us, right? What will actually kill us more is the stress of worrying about it. Am I right on that?
You are 100% right on that. And I think they're asking the wrong questions. And so we already live in an environment of fear. There is so much fear. We consume fear on a daily basis, at work, at home, on our phone. It's everywhere. So how about instead of asking the question of what's toxic for me, how about we ask the question, what's going to make me stronger? Because you know what? Guess what? Whether you believe in climate change or not, whether you believe in worsening of democratic tendencies, whichever way you look at it, at the moment, there isn't really a kind of a fairy tale happy ending narrative, you know? And so we can just safely assume that life is hard regardless. It's hard if you've come from you know, poor socioeconomic background, or if you have you know, if you've experienced trauma in early life, it's hard. If you are having difficulties at work and you've got a terrible boss, it's hard. If you're a mum of teenagers who are going through severe mental health issues, life is hard. It's just hard in different contexts for everyone. So we can't change that. The only thing we can do is how we react to that. So the practices you were mentioning earlier, we can become extremely discerning about the information we let in. So I also had lots of well-meaning friends and peers always sending me, oh, have you watched this podcast? Have you, you know, watched this podcast? Or do you follow this guy? And there's usually a lot of bro science that are making millions out of scaring people into buying specific supplements, right? There's a lot of crazy men in the US doing that, who also are not even qualified, just as an aside. So I think wouldn't it be just smarter to go, okay, well, let me get big red pen editing out. So first of all, you know what? The highest toxicity in life is people. So I would say if you just do one thing after this podcast, never mind looking at vitamins, DNA testing, all this fancy stuff, just write a list and with your red pen, work out who are the biggest toxic influencers in your life. They might not actually be neighbors or friends or colleagues. They might actually be media personalities or influencers. Get rid of that. Yeah. And then watch the rest of your body, like take a deep breath of excitement going, thank goodness we got rid of that pollution. And I'd say do that before you worry about microplastics and non-organic foods.
Such solid advice there. And you know what? I actually have done that. I've actually gone through my people I used to follow on Instagram and all of that sort of thing that were just sort of preaching all this health stuff. And I was like, you know what? Because I feel like it just gets too much and it's overwhelming. And the other thing I'll just point out as well, I think sometimes what I've done in the past is because I've been so like aware of my thoughts and like, you know, if I have a worrying thought and now like all the things about your thoughts become reality, I sometimes think, oh my God, I'm having that thought. What if I make it my reality? What if I draw it in? And it's actually like, you know, when I'm not visualizing what I want and where I'm going and all the excitement, if I'm then having a negative thought, that also can send me on a freaking spiral because I'm going to go, oh my God, I don't want to think about that. And then the more I don't want to think about it, the more I think about it. And then I'm in that spiral of like, oh, where's this going?
CEO DNA press on interesting with that. I don't even need to test your DNA. You test,
okay.
Definitely CEO.
Right. Okay. So on that then, right? Because there'll be a lot of CEO people.
About 20%. 15 to 20%.
Well, I would imagine a lot of the people that listen to this podcast, you know, they're in leadership, they want to step up into leadership, they're those A-type personalities. Can we just sort of actually just focus on that for 1 second? Because I'd love your opinion on this. What can they do that, you know, to just sort of like, where should they begin? Like, you know, if you've tested somebody, it comes out with all these markers of like, you know, we're CEO personality. What advice would you have for that group? And then I'd love to sort of maybe explore a couple of others that you see quite frequently as well. Yeah. If that's okay.
Yes. So the first thing I would say, I would want to look at their levels of magnesium. So I'll do that test, but you don't even need to do the testing. So if you're finding yourself feeling quite, I wouldn't use the word anxious, but just feeling stressed and overactivated in your brain in terms of this overthinking and you're struggling to fall asleep, or maybe you wake up in the night and straight away, like your body's still half asleep, but your mind is like, whoa, like we're there, right in the list. Have I done this? You know, what I need to do? Thinking through problems and having your best ideas, like at 3 a.m. And you might also have things like twitching eyelids or twitching in the body. You might be feeling tight in your neck and in your shoulders. Your bowel movements might be a little bit on the dry side, or not necessarily, but that could be a thing. So things are a little bit slower in that department. I would definitely say just you could do worse than starting off with magnesium and really loading that up. Now, I always have to say, because of my job title, just please double check with your GP. If you're on medication, just double check if, you know, because very high dose of magnesium could, you know, trigger palpitations and not work well with some medications. So please double check. But the best form would be a magnesium glycinate, or you could get any box standard magnesium, even from the supermarket. You don't need to spend a lot of money on minerals. Yeah. And in Australia, we're very lucky because we got very stringent regulations. So in the US, you can go and buy any old stuff. And as long as they present it as a food, it doesn't have to be regulated. So Australia truly has the best checking system. So you know that the supplements you buy here are safe. They have been tested. What you get in your tablet is what it says. So there's absolutely no shame in buying supplements from the supermarket. And I say this because a lot of my clients come to me and they're spending hundreds of dollars on these supermodel-based tablets that cost a lot, and they're not rocket science what's in them. So just save yourself a lot of money and put the money towards a nice spa trip or a holiday or something like that, which will do better, be better for your stress levels. So magnesium, you want to be taking ideally magnesium glycine, as I said, or if not, just buy box standard magnesium and find something called glycine. Okay, so you can go to a pharmacy and ask the naturopath there, I'd like to get some glycine. So glycine is really important is a cofactor to produce a neurotransmitter that's not very well talked about. It's called GABA. So there are two main neurotransmitters to activate nerve cells in the brain. One is excitatory, so it's glutamate, and that's the accelerator, and the other one is GABA. And so these two talk together, yeah, to work out whether a message goes through across nerve cells. And so we need glycine to help produce GABA, and magnesium is also really important for it. So I find that most people don't take enough, and you want to be taking magnesium in divided doses. So take a little bit with every meal, and that will prevent magnesium just drawing too much water into the bowel and then giving you sort of a little bit of loose bowels. So that's how you can build up higher levels. So that's absolutely important, because also magnesium is a cofactor for the CEO gene. So for it to work more efficiently, we literally need magnesium. Now, apart from testing magnesium, I see that people really need this mineral, because when we look at blood testing and we look at their biochemical balance of electrolytes, 9 times out of 10, clients that I test are in an acidic state. And I don't mean this as in, the blood type diet or the alkaline diet. I don't mean that. I mean in the sense that our blood has to keep a very tightly controlled pH, in order for everything to work. So the body will do that regardless. So your pH is always optimal unless you're in a disease state. The way it does that, however, is to draw electrolytes out of bone, minerals, or it gets it out of food. Now, the more stressed you are, the less availability of these electrolytes, and the modern diet, which is, usually higher protein, there's not enough dark vegetables. So we're all very low in these minerals. So that's why magnesium is absolutely important. So that's number one. The second thing that's really important is, remember I said that they're prone to rumination. Literally, the brain doesn't shut down. So, and this is more manifest in the evenings, because during the day, it's useful to have that brain. It allows you to do great stuff and tick things off your to-do list. And so that's really awesome. However, if you think of the CEO brain as, a super fast train, right? Wake up, you go, go, go. How is that going to stop? So I find that when I have this conversation with people, there is almost like this understanding and expectation that, I like to be able to work till 10 o'clock or whatever, but then I really would like to be able to go to bed and fall asleep. Biology doesn't work that way. So you're someone who overproduces adrenaline, and there's a half-life for these chemicals. They don't just shut down just like that. So you need to create basically almost like a landing strip, and allowing a little bit of space. So try and think of specific behaviors that start to signal to your brain that we're now winding down. So obviously, if you're working every day at night, maybe you have your dinner and then you go open your laptop again at home, that's not going to help. So it's okay to do that now and then, but if you're trying to retrain your brain to calm down, that's not going to serve you. So it would be better for you to get up earlier and do that work earlier if you really need to, rather than in the evenings. Create a third space. So go between work and home, whether you're working from home or working in the office, you need that space to really wind down. So change your clothes, power down all electronics, go for a walk, be in your body, because the CEO stays in the head. So particular things that will allow you to feel your body will be useful. So get yourself a little object that you can pick up from your desk, and that makes you feel like you're touching texture. Look at the color, really reconnect with your senses. And then when you get home, I would recommend avoiding alcohol, because that's what many people do. They think alcohol is going to help them de-stress, but then that's going to have an effect. And then power up with magnesium. So I think these are just three little tips that there's lots more, but and they will all be in my book that's coming out middle of this year. But these are three things. So thinking in terms of brain is super fast, so we need to allow it to just slow down in time.
I do absolutely love everything you've just said there, and I've been smiling because there's so much that I've actually implemented of what you've just said into my life. And one of them was, having really strict sort of boundaries around work, around when I switch off and not checking my phone and having that blue light stimulate me, and sitting, if I am watching, TV or something, but just not having all the lights on in the house. So just having a really soft light on, so my melatonin just naturally rises up. And then I'll always have a book by my bed, and I'll just sort of aim to sort of read a little few sort of paragraphs of that, and then I do sort of find myself winding down. But yeah, it was really tough at one point when my brain just wouldn't shut down, and that experience of thinking I'm asleep and my brain is still chatting away. I've very much been there a few times, but not as much so often. I feel like maybe it's come with a bit of wisdom as I've got older, but in my late 20s, I really struggled. That's really struggled. Rare. It's why I wanted to have this conversation.
Yeah. But also, see, if these things are worth, because obviously everyone was on a different spectrum. So some people just have this really chronic sleep onset insomnia. They just cannot stop it. So there will be other things. So there are amazing herbs that help re-engage the parasympathetic nervous system to calm down. There are also specific phospholipids that help break down cortisol faster. So there are lots of things, but again, it's always good to start with the simpler stuff and checking, am I already doing these things? Am I enforcing these healthy boundaries, right? Am I doing some exercise in the morning but not in the evening? So there's lots of little things that can be done one by one, but I always recommend just start with one thing and then do your own little experiment of one. So we do this and we're going to work out how am I feeling beforehand, and then I'm going to do this for three or four nights and then see whether I notice an improvement. So really be in control of that experiment, because then you can say, I did that for 2 weeks, it did absolutely nothing, but at least I'm only doing one thing at a time, right? I'm not getting overwhelmed by doing everything.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And just before we sort of move on, so I really do want to sort of chat about your book and things. Any other, types of people that come to you that you see quite often? You've got the CEOs that you said, you've got the warrior that you are. Any other typical patterns that you see that people come to you with? Any sort of is there one that's sort of more, popular than the other that you see when you're doing your testing?
Yes. So there's one that's very common. So when I look at these profiles, I think about the genetic underpinning of energy in leadership across three different planes, if you like. So the first plane is the circadian clock. So whether people have more energy in the morning rather than in the evening, or vice versa, when they have those dips. And then we have one that is related to their energy adaptation in terms of stress. So we've seen the CEO, we've seen the warrior. There's also another one called the diplomat. And then there's a third dimension, which is really based on the energy pattern. So, and this is across the whole day and also across seasons or cycles. So one of the most common ones within this particular plane is what I call the shooting star. And so they have that hyperactivity and brilliance, and then they crash. And the crash doesn't have to be I don't mean full crash burnout, but they are definitely aware that the people who are experiencing these, I start off well, and then after a couple of hours, I peak, and there's a bit of a trough, and then I feel better. I eat some food, I feel better, or have some coffee, and then I'm coming back down. Now, they are definitely more prone to experiencing a major dip in the afternoon. So they're not productivity buffs between 2 and 4 p.m. usually. And this can become really significant if they're really out of balance. And also they manifest things in middle age, they're really starting to put weight on, and no matter what they do, nothing changes. So I see some women who are literally starving themselves because they just they're scratching their heads. They have no idea what's happening. And so there's a real block there. So that's a very common pattern to see. And they can also have sleep issues, because this particular genotype is really linked to blood glucose dysregulation.
Mm-hmm. And just sort of, I guess, one sort of piece of advice for that group that they could implement into their life that would help them have more energy and vitality throughout their days and lives.
So this is the genotype that responds really, really quickly, and the listeners can try this for themselves. And I would say give yourself just 1 week and your life won't be the same again. I would basically eliminate not carbohydrates, but starches from their diet. So they do really poorly with starches. So starches are found in all grains and flours and their derivatives. So your breads, your pastries, your rice, it doesn't matter if it's brown rice, white rice, all rice and then the lights like pastries and potatoes. So just base your diets around lean proteins, heaps and heaps of non-starchy vegetables, some berries, some dairy if you tolerate it, healthy oils, and within a week you already should see significant changes.
Amazing, amazing. So the last thing I want to sort of like say before I go into your book is so when people come to you, like let's just say someone listens to this right now, it's like, I want to get my DNA tested. I want to really sort of go on this journey. And because I think the more we understand about ourselves, the better leaders we're going to be, the more we're going to be able to show up for ourselves, for our family, for our coworkers, for our team. Like it is so important. Energy and vitality and health it should be number one, but it's not for so many people until they get the diagnosis, they get the energy crash, they get the fatigue, or they can't get out of bed in the morning. It's like, let's not wait till we get to that point. Let's actually just acknowledge that there's a few things we could do to be really optimal and to really sort of improve our health. So how would they go about sort of like coming to you? What would be like sort of, what's the protocol that you actually go through so people really understand what would be involved?
So I always start off with something I call the DNA discovery. And some people, that's all they want. They just want to go through the discovery process. So we basically work together for about 4 weeks. And what this entails is we do the testing that I've discussed. So we do the blood testing, we do the DNA testing, we do continuous glucose monitoring, we do all the challenges. And then they fill in a number of different questionnaires so that I can really sit down and put together a personalized strategy based on everything they've told me, everything they're feeling, everything in their family history. So we do a really comprehensive health history intake questionnaire. And then with the data that has come through the comprehensive blood test, the DNA, the continuous glucose monitor, then we spend 2 hours together and we go through a whole lifestyle plan. So they discover all these signatures. So what are all the specific signatures? So it's easy for them to understand. And I have a system of these epigenetic levers, so interventions, which are called boosters and busters. So nothing is good or bad. It's basically what's going to give you more of this and a bit less of that. And so then they have the choice. So it's a smorgasbord of all these interactions and different behavior changes. And so we go through it together so that they understand. They tell me, that really appeals to me. I can see how that could work. And then they have a plan. I always then do, you know, long-term coaching for people. But I always start, regardless of whether someone wants to work with me on a specific performance plan or not, we always start off with that because we really need to understand. I can't give advice unless I know that. It's really, really important.
It certainly is. And I feel like more and more people are starting to realize and understand this now, but maybe they're not quite sure where to turn to, or they're going to go and do another fad diet, or they're going to go to extreme exercise routine, or they're just, it's like actually everyone's an individual and it's going to need different individual things. So I think like, I absolutely love what you do. I think it's absolutely fantastic.
And there are so many also with extreme diets, if I may. I mean, there are so many crazy things out there. So just recently I put out, a newsletter to my database, to my clients, talking about, do you really understand the game that you're playing? Because, your 20-something American bro who's lifting weights and who's peddling the carnivore diet has a very different game to the game that you want to play as a mid-40, early-50 female leader, okay? So apart from the biology being completely different, but what game are you trying to play? Because when you're in your 20s or your 30s, it might be one thing. Once you get to 40s and 50s, your game might be, without you actually articulating it, that you do want to live into your 90s, being completely compos mentis, not being in a home, enjoying your retirement, being present for your kids or your pets, doing fabulous traveling and looking hot, because why not? I'm Italian. We like looking hot, you know, even in your 80s and 90s. So that's my game. Maybe you have a different game, but I find that generally many of my clients, before allowing themselves the time to think about this, are still stuck in the game they were playing in their 30s, yeah, which is maybe being super thin or, and then being go, 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 right? Just like you can relax a little bit. Yeah, you've proven yourself, you're established, you've got good experience, good capability. Now let's switch gears, because those roles will not take you to the 90s. And so things like the carnivore diet or the extreme diets, in 10 years, I'm waiting to see the explosion of colon cancer as a result of that diet, because we've got a lot of evidence to say it's really not healthy. So again, be discerning. You know, you're super smart. You don't need to be taking advice from someone on TikTok or Instagram. And just listen to yourself and be more sensible and choose something that is for you specifically.
Absolutely solid advice there. So good. Yeah. And I think like your goals and your values change as you get older as well. And my husband and I, we have a saying, it's like, people are like, you know, we love being active. We go for our walks and, you know, I enjoy going to the gym and just riding my bike and stuff. And people say, oh, what are you training for? And I'm like, I'm training for the 100-year-old Olympics. And what that means is I want to be able to climb up the stairs. I want to be able to be, you know, self-sufficient. I don't want to be just like hobbling around. I want to be healthy well into my hundreds. And what do I need to do today to make that happen? And my whole exercise routine has changed since I was in my 20s. I'm not doing really intense fitness classes anymore. Like I used to do in like CrossFit and all of that sort of jumpy, pumpy stuff. Not anymore. I listen to my body. I train, you know, with weights 3-4 times a week, which I think is so good for my body, because I do sort of struggle to put on, you know, and I don't have what muscle is for bone health and all that sort of stuff. I don't run as much as I used to. I now walk and cycle because it's less impact. Like, I think we just need to be aware of like, and I think just the final thing on the whole diet and exercise culture, it's all about like punishment. It's about like, you know, we've got to change the narrative, especially as women. It's got to be about longevity and health and well-being, not about getting into a certain size of pair of jeans or, you know, it's like, it's rubbish. It's got to stop.
Yeah, and it's something that I'd love to share, because not many women know this, and this hopefully might help women change the narrative from looking fit to being strong, because that's the big gain, right? From 50, just the muscle mass, and after 60, it really declines very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about being strong. But the other thing is that there's not really talked about is that it's actually an evolutionary mechanism for women to start putting on a little bit of extra fat when they're going through perimenopause, because, and as long as it's subcutaneous fat, so under the skin as opposed to visceral fat. So we usually do a DEXA body scan to see if women are carrying fat around their organs or if it's just under the skin. So the body switches to laying down more of the subcutaneous fat in preparation for the ovaries stopping to work. And that's because fat tissue releases small amounts of estrogen. So the body obviously doesn't know that we've now got HRT. And so from an evolutionary perspective, it has this protective mechanism. And so provided that, again, your blood markers are all good and you're feeling great, you know, you're following fairly good lifestyle things, but generally your energy is good, you know, and you're not putting on too much weight around the middle, because that's the main thing that might indicate the fat is around the organs. Actually, being a little bit heavier in your 50s is completely normal and even protective and a bit beneficial for women.
And I love that. And I wish that there was more the narrative being pushed, but it's very, it's got even worse. I think like when I was a young girl, like now we just can go onto Instagram and compare ourselves to all these airbrushed celebrities and models. And Yeah. And then there's the Ozempic that's just come out as well. I mean, God knows what that's going to, the side effects of that's going to be. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy stuff out there at the moment. Yeah.
And the thing is, look, whilst I'm glad that there are those drugs that can help people that actually, you know, have medically diagnosed obesity, that have struggled with other things. So that there's a whole conversation to be had around that. My concern is that we're not having the real conversations, and I don't mean medical obesity. I don't mean to be shaming people like, oh, if you only did a diet, you would. It's more complex than that. But to say that, again, we are taking the focus away from doing all the other things that, regardless whether we are on Ozempic or not, we ought to be doing just for our own mental health and well-being, because the body rewards you very quickly if you give it the right activity, the right emotional connection, fresh air, sunshine, you know, relatively clean water, some healthy food. You know, it's really not rocket science. I mean, I know that I'm splitting hairs and I'm doing all this testing and I love it. But really, at a very basic level, we have lost the ability to really take care of us, and we saw attention out all the time. And to me now, it's crazy. Then we've got all these crazy self-care things and crazy diets where we're not even doing the basic. Yeah. Are you trying to get to bed at a decent time? You know, are you on your phone, you know, scrolling for 4 hours after work? So there are more basic things to, you know, to do. So it's a big conversation, and one that we just, people like yourself, I'm really glad that you are sharing all this information, because your audience definitely need it.
Mm. Well, I think everybody who listens to this podcast, it, you know, takes their career seriously, wants to go to the next level. And you can't go to the next level if you're not healthy, happy, in a good state and energized. Like, you're never going to get there if you're not sort of feeling at your best. Because when we're in that lousy state, when we've got no energy, when we're like, oh, I can't be bothered today, or we're getting those afternoon slumps, or we're not sleeping well, we're riddled with stress, we're not going to be ready for the next step in our career.
Correct. Absolutely. So you'll be snappy. Your decision making ability, which is really, you know, a big portion of what leadership is, will be completely compromised, because your prefrontal cortex won't be that engaged because you're so stressed. And there is such a thing also as mirror neurons. So people pick up on your energy, and just have a look around. You'll see people that actually look healthy and have that healthy, optimal well-being energy. You just want to be around them, because we actually inherently feel good. So if you as a leader, you're waking up, you're exhausted, you're brain fogged, you're skipping meals, which is one thing I see female leaders doing all the time. They're under the misguided notion that skipping breakfast and doing intermittent fasting is really good for them. Incidentally, if you're a CEO, that's the worst thing you can do, because when you're skipping meals, you're doing intermittent fasting, your adrenaline levels go up, because again, the brain still thinks that we are in an era where we need to go hunting for bisons. So if there is no food, then we need to have higher levels of adrenaline and noradrenaline to focus. So that's not a great one. So it's really important to just really understand how this, you know, how this whole this process works.
Absolutely. Now, excitingly, you've got a book coming out soon, unless it's already out and I'm mistaken, but it's called the DNA of Performance.
Yeah.
So when does that come out? Where can we get a copy of that? And what's in the book? I'm guessing more amazing information that we've discussed today.
Yes. So there will be a lot more in-depth information around this. I really wanted to create a book that accompanies my programs, but also for people who are not going to be doing genetic testing. So when I run corporate programs, we don't always do genetic testing. And so I have this framework that allows you to answer a questionnaire to work out what pattern of DNA signature you are. And so you will be able to really understand, without doing the actual swabbing, whether you're a shooting star or a CEO. And then it will give you a very pragmatic approach. First of all, an understanding of what that signature is, and you know, the strengths and vulnerabilities, and then all these lifestyle-based interventions, but then you'll be able to select and create your own little personalized program. And so it's been a while in the making because it's had to collate a lot of information and evidence to write it, but I'm really hoping it's coming out for my birthday, 10th of August. So August 2025. And it will be available on Amazon, and obviously it'll be available through my website, and I'm sure I'll be doing announcements on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we'll have you back on the podcast at that point anyway, and I might read the book and I'll have a million other questions to ask you, I'm sure, after that. But look, we've covered a lot of ground today. Is there anything that we haven't covered, or anything you want to leave the audience with that you feel could be of value?
Or how much time do we have?
Another hour?
That's a dangerous question to ask me. I would say, in the context of what you were saying, in terms of the longevity and, you know, the 100-year sort of marathon and being still available physically, emotionally, psychologically, cognitively, I just want to sow a few seeds. And dementia is not just one thing. There are many, many different types of dementias, but let's talk about dementia as an umbrella. Is something that induces incredible fear in the vast majority of people. And in fact, when they've done surveys, they found that people are more scared of having dementia than cancer these days.
Wow.
And that is because we have this understanding that we don't really have treatment and all of that. So I just want to say that we are heading into an era, as we're living longer, where, you know, we're predicted that by 2050, we'll have a doubling of dementia cases in Australia and worldwide. So everything that we have talked about, yeah, I'm not saying that if you do all the things we talked about, you won't get dementia. But if you start embarking upon this quest for, first of all, what is the game I'm going to play? Yes. And do I want to put in place preventative practices to ensure that I remain strong? So we want strong female leaders. Boy, oh boy, do we need strong female leaders right now. Like, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
So... And if that's what you want to achieve, then really start focusing on healthy metabolism. So having really good glucose control. So look out for that red flag. Are you feeling tired after eating carbohydrate meals? Are you having that 2 p.m. itis? Yeah. So look at understanding that and look at fixing that, because that's a big part of dementia spectrum is actually poor metabolism, because the brain consumes glucose. So we want to have that strong metabolic health, number one. Number two, look at your sleep. Maybe sleep is your vulnerability. We all have Achilles heels, yeah? So really look at, hone in on that. We need healthy sleep because we have something called the lymphatic system that happens at night that cleans up a lot of these excessive proteins and tangles in the brain. So we want to have really good sleep. So focus on that. And the third thing is maintain your muscle mass. So I love cardio, I love running and all of those kinds of things, but unfortunately we lose muscle so very quickly as we age, and the volume of our muscle, our lean mass, is directly correlated with the volume of the brain. So both the muscle and the brain shrink as we age. So if you're not doing any exercise, or if you're only doing cardio, I really invite you to start looking at even just starting once a week, going to the gym or getting some weights, and really start lifting. So do these three things and you are sowing some healthy seeds for a strong brain and body.
Alessandra, I could honestly go for another hour. I feel like this has just been such a great topic.
You've asked great questions.
Because I'm interested, I'm really passionate about it as well, because, you know, I get a lot of women coming onto this podcast, incredible women leaders. And, you know, we talk a lot about career and stuff, but I feel like the missing piece for a lot of people is that whole wellness and that longevity and that energy. So I'm so glad we've touched upon these topics today. But I'll make sure I link your LinkedIn profile below. So please go and follow Alessandra. And if you're interested in going to get your DNA tested, then I think that sounds like such an amazing thing to do. What a tool to have. That information.
Thank you
so much. That's fantastic.
Amazing. And all that info is on my website. So there's prices and how to book in. And so even if you just want to have a chat, so I have a link just to book a complimentary introductory call.
Amazing. Thank you so much. It's been a great conversation.
It's been great. Great questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thanks so much for doing that, and I can't wait to share the next episode with you.